I can also talk to different officials about issues that are going on or like the needs of patients. I am a patient, right?
Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of Why Y'all Working. I am your co-host, Michael Ogusanya. Alair is going to be joining us shortly, but we have an amazing guest that we want to bring to you, and we think you're going to love this conversation. We have Jasmine Evans, PhD candidate, kidney, and overall Black health advocate, someone that cares deeply about things that we often overlook when it comes to our health, wellness, and just overall our perspectives and mentality when we enter a different healthcare institution. So give a great welcome, a what's up, a congrats, and just get ready to hear from Jasmine.
Hey, glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining. And I want to just start out with our question we love asking people. Jasmine, why do you work?
Why do I work? Because we live in a capitalist society and you can't survive without working. If that's like the simplest answer, that is why I work. But I will say why I do the work that I do now is part that, right? But then also another part, just like passion for like my people and my community, especially whenever we talk about just like health disparities within our societies, within our countries, way too often, it's us, the people who look like us, that receive the shorter end of the stick. And I'm tired of it. I grew up with people who had these different like chronic or terminal illnesses and just seeing the way that the healthcare system treated them. And then also like my own personal journey and seeing how I was treated. I said, you know, if I can be a part of this change, then I will. So yeah, survival. Basically, that's it. Just survival. Survival from like a health standpoint, and also we in this country, we got to make money to survive.
Facts, got to get to the bag. So why, and I think you touched on it a little, who are some of the people that inspire you? What was some of the work ethic that you saw from family figures, parental figures in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever it comes to the work that I do, I have two real main influences. And one is just the people that I have met along the way, whether it was through my childhood or even the people that I met going through my whole kind of like kidney health journey. They really inspired me. Their stories inspired me. And I just so happened to have this platform where I get to speak for them. So they always influence me and motivate me to keep up this work. But I will say another major influence for me was actually one of my first dialysis nurses. I'm not going to say her name because she doesn't really like the publicity and things of that nature, but you know who you are. Whenever I first started dialysis, it was really a tough transition for me. But, you know, we'll get into that a little bit more. But she was really the one who was like, you know, you're going to get through this. You can, you know, look forward to your life outside of dialysis. This is temporary. I really credit her with like really helping me get adjusted and have this perspective of this is not forever. And I'm going to kick dialysis ass. So I really do like love and appreciate her. But I would definitely say whenever it comes to this health journey, those are my two main influences.
That's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, how often do you see people, you know, rise to a level of success and influence without, you know, having important people that influence them directly? You know, there's a saying, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and you got some amazing giants in your life.
Absolutely.
So I'd love for us to talk about, for the people that may not know, please share about that platform. Please share, you know, if you were to describe what you do in three different words to describe yourself. Let's just hear about who you are and your story, because it's really unique and insightful.
Absolutely. Thank you. So if I had to use three words to describe what I do, I would say researcher and patient advocate. So basically, if we start from the beginning, right, whenever I was 17 years old, I got diagnosed with stage 3 chronic kidney disease. And that was earth shattering for me, because as like a 17, 18 year old, old. I'm graduating high school, about to go to college. You know, I have my whole life in front of me. And then I get diagnosed with this disease that does not have a cure and could potentially take my life, and not really understanding like what that meant for me. And so I went through this entire process of really just trying to manage my health while kind of getting my footing in this world. And whenever I entered into my PhD program in 2019, that's when I started peritoneal dialysis, which is basically like this modality where you do dialysis at home. I didn't have to go into a center like 3 or 4 times a day for however many times a week. I didn't have time for that, right? I'm a PhD student. I'm a director of different organizations. I'm a senior editor for one of our academic journals. Like, I didn't have time to really be in those centers. And so I was able to do it at home. And so I did that for 4 years. And then one day, I believe it was either April or March of 2023, I got a letter in the mail, and it said, hey, we actually owe you extra time on the transplant waiting list, because during your evaluations, we use this race-based algorithm called the EGFR. And basically, it overestimated your kidney function because you are Black. And so immediately I was outraged, but also I'm a professional researcher at this time too. So with my degrees being in Black studies and primarily focusing on all aspects of health, whether it was physical health or mental health, I just started doing what I knew to do. I just started researching and asking questions about how could something like this continue to happen in a country where we have our first Black president, right? Like, we are this kind of, we have these symbols of change and of progress within our country, and yet we're still outdated in so many ways. And so I really started a deep dive into understand that, you know, whenever we talk about racial bias, it's become the standard in the healthcare field because it's been embedded for centuries at this point from the very beginning. And so at this point, no one really like bats an eye about these things that are happening. It's just, you know, it's status quo, it's par for the course. And I did not think that that was fair. I was outraged because, like I alluded to earlier, I knew people in my childhood, people in my community, family, friends, who have died either waiting for a kidney or being on dialysis. I knew, like, sharing my story on these platforms, I have known people that have also had that same fate. And I grieved for them because I'm like, this isn't fair that, you know, I get this, I guess, like, push and like they didn't. And so for me, I said that, you know, I'm gonna go forward and I'm gonna advocate as much as I can. And so July 4th, actually, of 2023, that's when I ended up getting my kidney transplant. And it's been very successful, very healthy, no signs of rejection, anything like that. So I'm very grateful to my team and, you know, to this little kidney that's keeping me healthy. But after that, this became basically a national story. So different organizations, especially within like the healthcare field, health news, and even bigger news platforms, started to pick up on healthcare centers basically getting rid of the EGFR algorithm. And so Jefferson was like, hey, we have this girl. She's been posting on TikTok and Instagram about her story. And she's also studied a lot of this as well. We think that she should be one of the faces in front of this. And so I got a call one day from the Associated Press, and it just kind of took off from there. And so I've been able to share my stories on these different platforms and really just tell people about this thing that's happening, and also how to advocate for themselves within like their own medical centers, understanding the silent symptoms of these different chronic illnesses, because a lot of them, we don't know that we have it until we're getting into like late stage, stage 4, end stage, things of that nature. And so if you can understand these things, if you know how to advocate for yourself, if you know which tests to ask for, then we can catch these things early. We can even prevent them. And so that's really my biggest goal right now, is to really just educate and bring awareness around these different issues, because we need it. So that's a roundabout way of saying how we got here.
Absolutely. No, people need to hear that. We see reproductive rights on the ballots in many states. And for the people who don't know, for a lot of people, Black women are the most under-treated people when it comes to pregnancies and C-sections, where, you know, when they ask you to rate your pain on a scale of 1 to 10, it's usually whatever they say, they treat it as if it's 3 points less. So it could be a 9, you know, near debilitating pain, and it's okay, we'll give you some painkillers, or a 3, and it's, no one cares about it until, you know, unfortunately some pregnancy complications happen. And that's just something that should be a right. Black life should be a right in America. If you're born here, if you have family here, if you want to succeed in this country, you have and you deserve the right to healthcare, the access to healthcare.
Absolutely. So. And especially whenever we talk about Black women, right? Like, we are now in October. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Black women are diagnosed with breast cancer more than any other demographic, right? Even as we talk about reproductive health and care, Black women getting, like, having to get fibroid surgeries and things of that nature. Whenever we just talk about our community as a whole, we are severely underserved. And I often talk about this with, like, different doctors or medical students, that we can talk about race, right, whenever it comes to these different things, but it's not that we are genetically or biologically predisposed to these different conditions. You also have to understand, like, the systematic barriers that our community has. So we need to look at place. What type of neighborhoods are we living in, right? Do we have access to adequate healthcare where doctors are actually fully staffed and fully funded? And I mean, pardon my French, but, like, actually given damn too, right? Like, are we living in food deserts where people have actual access to, like, quality foods and not just, like, these very cheaply made foods or just fast food and things of that nature? There's so much more nuance to this conversation other than just looking at the color of my skin and either underdiagnosing me or overdiagnosing me. And so I think that there definitely needs to be just, like, this change of re-education. I remember I was asked, like, what advice I would give to, like, tenured seasoned doctors who basically have to go and relearn these things. And, you know, my mother used to always say, the man that knows something knows that he knows nothing at all, right? Like, learning is a lifelong thing. It is okay to change your assumptions and your mind when you're presented with new information. And so I would say, don't be afraid to go back, right? And get that education and really learn how to be non-biased whenever you're dealing with your patients.
I mean, so well said, so well said. And I would love to know, because, again, I have a lot of friends that are pursuing their PhD, PhD candidates, people listening are going through their own terminal or master's degrees. So when you talk about, again, advocacy, because you found this beautiful career that mixes passion with, you know, approaching real problems mixed with data research, data validation, and also social justice. You're really out talking and helping people. What does it look like to support yourself both mentally and financially as you're pursuing what can be a 5, 6, 7 plus year journey?
Yes, absolutely. So supporting yourself in all different aspects, right? Whether it be physically, mentally, financially, is very important in this journey, because we know if you're not getting funding, you are completely, like, underpaid, right? And so for me, I am blessed that I do have funding through my department. So they pay for my tuition. They also give me a stipend, but I also have to support myself outside of that too, right? So I do consulting with different companies, whether it be for education, like DEI, making sure that their curriculums really reflect the demographics that of the students that they're serving, or even on the advocacy side with different healthcare institutions. If you want me to come in, you have to pay me, right? Like, we're not doing this for free. But whenever it comes to me actually talking to patients, because I have been in their shoes, right? For me, one thing that I cannot do is, like, charge patients, right, for talking to me and things of that nature. But healthcare institutions, absolutely, because, like, they need to get their stuff together. But for, like, a mental aspect of this whole thing, therapy has been my best friend, especially going through the mental toll of having a disease that, you know, you have to think about your mortality a lot. Like I said, a lot of people die on dialysis every day. A lot of people die waiting for a kidney transplant. And I definitely thought that that was going to be me. And so really having to process those feelings on top of being in a very rigorous program as well. I'm lucky that my professors and, like, my supervisor for my teaching assistantship really understood, like, what was going on and really gave me the support that I needed. But that's not always the case with a lot of these different departments. So I'm glad that I had that safeguard in there as well. But really just taking time to do the things that I like to do. So before we got on this call, I told you, like, I just got done like writing for hours, and then we're here doing this interview. And something that I'm going to do for me, I'm going to a concert after this, right? Because I understand that I'm also a person outside of this, and I need to be able to find things that fill me as I'm pouring out to other people. So I lean on my community a lot, because they'll definitely tell me, like, hey, Jay, you are doing a little bit too much. Like, you need to slow it down. You need to take a break. And so I'm really grateful for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, what can we do without friends, you know?
What can we do without our friends and our community?
And you spoke about it too, because sometimes you need a friend to tell you, like, you may not know what you're doing. You may not know if you're even, you know, thesis is going to get approved, dissertation, but I see you and I recognize the work you're putting in. So chill.
So like, chill out. Or even if I feel like, you know, like I'm not doing enough, I have friends that have to sit me down and like, girl, like, let's list all the things that you have done, right? Like, you are okay. Like, you're doing enough. You don't have to, you know, overextend yourself in these ways. Like, you're doing fine. Chill out a little bit. And so, again, for that, I'm very grateful.
Facts. And so let's just dive a little deeper again in that topic. What are some tips that you can provide people pursuing their PhDs? Let's say it's in psychology, sociology, and life sciences. Mm-hmm. What are some tips you can provide, again, towards financially supporting yourself as a PhD candidate in those spaces?
So first thing that I will always say is make sure you are applying and responding to programs that have funding. If you don't have to take out loans, do not take out loans, because loans are the devil. Like, do not do it unless you 100% have to. But there are so many fellowships and grants out there. You just have to be organized and like take the time to really like just sit there and search and apply for them. So I will always say, like, go for the free money, like 100%. And then after that, find ways that you can support yourself, but these things also align to what you're doing. So for example, for me, I know that I like to do consulting work, but I'm going to do consulting work around education and healthcare advocacy, because those are things that are aligned with my passion and my career. Don't be out here, you know, studying psychology, but you are doing administrative work at a law firm. If it doesn't align with what you're doing, then you don't have time for it. Everything should be a stepping stone to get you to the career that you want to be in. So if it's not going to help your future, don't even waste time with it.
Mm. And especially in today's social media age, you're seeing drop shipping, seeing people drop serving papers. I mean, there's so many things people tell you that sounds like you said, oh, I might make this much an hour, but you've gotten to this program, you've done this much work for a reason. Align your skills with those very, you know, with those very applications it has, you know, in the industry.
Exactly, because employers, they're not just looking for careers anymore. I mean, not careers, but they're not just looking for degrees anymore, right? They're also looking for skills. So you can say like, yes, I've spent 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years, right? Like pursuing this degree. But if the only thing that you're doing is pursuing the degree, you're doing yourself a disservice. You also need to build up those skills as well.
And we got Alair in here. Alair, say what's up.
Thank you, Jasmine, for showing up today. Sorry I'm late as per usual, you know, health things, gotta put your health first, so just trying to get up on, but I appreciate you sharing earlier. I did want to follow up on one important point that you had made about building your career while also building your educational experience, I guess, if you will. How have you specifically gone about structuring that for your career, and how do you suggest that other people who are either following in your footsteps or just like how you've, you know, described earlier, how do you suggest people nowadays in the current environment, knowing that it takes times six figs to get a psychology degree, depending on where you go, right? And the amount of debt may not be worth it for some. So for those that, you know, the path of education as an option, but to your point, right, get the experiential learning, because that's just going to benefit you almost as much, if not more than, because then you also have like some networking experiences. Let me get your thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And also, I just want to say, I'm never going to fault you for putting your health first. Like, We're 100% health over here, so take all the time that you need. But to answer your question, the first thing that I will say for a student, especially being in rigorous programs like a doctoral degree, because this is different from your master's, and your master's is definitely a different league from getting a bachelor's or an undergrad degree, right? So the first thing that I would try to say is try to support yourself with scholarships, grants, and fellowships, because that is, it'll do a couple of things, right? It will either just not really demand like too much of your time. You may not have responsibilities like outside of receiving that grant. That already opens up your time more for you to focus on your studies. And then any project that you want to work on outside of that, which we'll get to in just a second. If you have a fellowship and you're applying for fellowships within your specific discipline, you're already aligning yourself with what you are going to school for. So for example, I applied for a scholarship with the Geopian Institute for Scholarly Advancement. They are one of the big powerhouse kind of like think tanks for my discipline. And so I was like, I'm definitely going to apply for this fellowship because it aligns with what I'm trying to learn and what I'm trying to do, especially whenever it comes to like just being an educator, not just only on the collegiate level, but also on like a community level as well. It taught me how to make my classes more accessible for different communities. It taught me how to teach for different audiences. It taught me how to put on major international events too as well, right? Like conferences and things of that nature. These are all skills that I can now translate into my actual career and passion that I want to do. If I want to plan like an entire healthcare conference, I know exactly what it takes to do something like that, right? If I want to create a community education program, which I have before, I already have the skills of doing that because I've been in this fellowship. So I would say first look for those grants and fellowships because that is already going to align you or free up your time to do other things. And so once you have that out the way, hopefully you are able to cover it. But if not, then look for jobs that again are going to give you skills that are going to align with your career. So for example, if you want to go into event management, right, you need to be applying to different places that can actually give you experience putting on events. If you want to go into psychology, start applying to some of these like counseling offices or therapist offices or just even nonprofits that offer mental health resources. Not only are you going to get like networking opportunities and connections there, you're also going to get a lot of experience because you already know like what these type of companies are asking of you and what they want to see. And even you working with those companies, you might be able to like slide right on in there after graduation too, right? So these are things that you should be looking forward and doing. So for me, I also had a very unique opportunity just because of the position that I was in with my degree. Well, to go back, I don't think I told you guys what my degrees are in. So all of my degrees are in either Pan-African Studies or Africology, which is basically just not only looking at like the history of African diasporic communities, but also culture, different issues that are going on in there. So I was able to carve a lane and a pathway talking about like health equity, mental health equity, things of that nature. So now that I'm in my PhD program, the things that I am focusing on is community education, which helps me with my patient advocacy and even if spreading awareness about these different things, being able to break down very complex topics for different audiences, different levels of understanding, and then also my patient experience. I can talk about it from that aspect as well, and just like the social sciences that go around, like the different dynamics within our community. I have all of that kind of like wrapped up into one. So something that I did as the director of our graduate student organization, I actually created a community education program that would allow our students to like teach in the community while also us learning from them as well. So having this reciprocal exchange of information that taught me project management skills, that taught me how to build a program, how to build different curriculums that already built off of my experience with the fellowship that I had. And so now that I'm going into more patient advocacy and teaching people how to speak up for themselves in doctor's offices, which medical simple tests that you need to ask for, how to understand the silent symptoms of different chronic illnesses or terminal illnesses even, right? And just really bringing awareness around things that people in our community don't really understand, or it's just like not on the forefront of their mind. I understand how to break down this information for different like learning levels and levels of understanding. And then also going into more like healthcare policy. I can also talk to different officials about issues that are going on or like the needs of patients. I am a patient, right? And so I can talk to them about how we can develop different policies to create more equity whenever it comes to healthcare, more resources, more money for research and different things of that nature. So all of that together, all of my experiences have really brought me to this point, whether it was from my professional view or from my personal view. And so that is the advice that I would give to your audience. If you are going for your degrees, just make sure, again, that everything that you are doing is a stepping stone to where you want to go. And don't waste your time with things that are not going to get you to that goal.
Sharing that was a great way to wrap it up, too, because I think that from a lot of different perspectives, when you go to school, you may not know which path you want to take, and or the path that you're taking for your degree may not be what you're working in. Like, you may be studying to get comp sci, but you're working at a shoe place, which, again, unless you're working at the corporate and coding for the shoe guys, you're not really doing anything relevant to your degree. Definitely hear you on, you know, making sure that you at least do something experientially comparable to, if not equivalent, to your actual interests are and where you want to be in life. So that way it makes it easier for you to transition into that career job. And for some of those people that we may know that are either still students in college or university, or you're maybe high school, or even if you're a mid-career and you're thinking about a career change of sorts, keep that in mind, because sometimes, you know, you may be a project manager or product manager, for example, but you want to switch to a career in media, for example, or journalism, completely different fields. You may have to go back to school for that, right? So think about the process it may take for you to move forward in those different lanes, and just make sure that you choose what's best for you. So
absolutely. And listen, even if you are working at the shoe store, I'm pretty sure there is an organization that's doing what you want to do in the future who has a job opening in the mailroom, right? Like, just get into the organization and work your way up from there.
Serendipity is key. You never know who you'll meet and how.
Exactly.
Now we're gonna jump into some questions with you about health, overall functional health, and answer some of the most thought about questions that people might be thinking about. So thank you again, Jasmine. This has been a great episode. Thanks to all y'all listening. Again, this is Why Y'all Working. I'm Michael Ogusanya, and we'll talk soon. Peace.